Blog Talk Radio.
I got a lot of thoughts in my head. That's my song. All right, so the Democratic establishment has a new trick they're using. I'm going to break it down in a second here. It's kind of driving me crazy. I'm going to describe how we're all fucked. Aren't you happy you turned into Secular Talk in the morning so you can get all the really upsetting information? This is a no-win election for anybody, and I'm going to describe that. And I think I'm taking the most skeptical outlook possible at this point, so I'm going to do that. We also have Donald Trump's tax plan. His original tax plan he had tweaked. Now we have a new report on the effects of his newer tax plan. Oh, God, it's so bad. Oh, it's horrendous. We'll talk about that. I got a lot of crazy religious folks in the show today. I have Mike Pence at an event, people calling for revolution, unbelievable stuff. So we're going to talk about all this and then some. Quick program note, I didn't know this until this morning, but no show tomorrow and Friday because I'm really getting close with the new studio where there's got cable, internet, all that fun stuff is going in, so I gotta be there and got some furniture going in and everything. So no show for the next 2 days as a result of that. I know you'll miss me. You'll be okay. But needless to say, we'll be back Monday. I'm also going to try to jam as much as possible into this show today to make up for some of that lost time, and I have enough stories to do that. So if I can, it depends. We'll see. If I can, I'll try to do another no-break show. Like a boss, bitch. All right. So let's get started, and we go right to the Democratic establishment, and we'll talk about what they're doing. Establishment has a new trick that they're using to distract from the recent WikiLeaks documents. And actually, you know what? I shouldn't call it a new trick because it's a recycled trick. It's a new old trick. It's a trick that the Republicans used to use, and now it's a trick that the Democrats have embraced with open arms. So, namely, what they're doing is they're taking the information in the recent WikiLeaks documents, and they're wholesale dismissing it. Everything doesn't count. Don't look at that. In fact, if you look at that, you're a bad person, and you're nefarious, and you're suspect by default because Putin. So the Kremlin, Vladimir Putin, Russia. Do you not hear me? I keep saying Putin. It's Putin. Putin. So their argument is, well, I mean, look, where do you think those documents came from? Those documents were obviously hacked by Russia. Then Russia sent them to U.S. media organizations and to WikiLeaks. And then now they're leaking all the emails and they're trying to dig up dirt on the Clintons and trying to dig up dirt on the Democratic Party, because they want to see Donald Trump win. Now, have they presented any actual evidence for this? No. Not a shred of evidence. they just keep asserting it as if it is factual, and if you say it enough, people will start going, yeah, I mean, I guess, sure, it came from Russia. I mean, I guess that's the point. And let's dig deeper on this, because nobody tries to take it to its logical conclusion. Let's assume for a second that is true. Why would they be doing it? Like, this is just Cold War hysteria and red baiting that they're doing. But what would be the logical conclusion of, okay, let's try to destroy the Democrats to get Trump elected? Trump's rhetoric on the campaign trail has been, okay, look, I kind of want to be friends with Russia as much as possible. I mean, we have a uniting thing to be against ISIS, so maybe it makes sense to actually be friends with them, but, you know, we should be friends to the extent that we can. Now, I think Donald Trump is a buffoon, don't get me wrong, and he's an idiot, as I think he's proven time and time and time again. But when he says that, is he wrong? No, of course not. What reasonable person sits there in the U.S. and they're like, I can't wait to escalate with Russia to possibly World War III over Syria? No reasonable person does that. And in fact, the Democratic strategy is just sell fear on this. But what's the end goal? So if it is true that that Russia is hacking the Democratic emails and giving them to WikiLeaks, well, wouldn't it be because, according to the rhetoric at least, they want to move away from war? Because Hillary Clinton is more hawkish in her rhetoric against Russia. Donald Trump is less hawkish, though it's weird that Pence is equally as hawkish as Hillary Clinton, his VP, so that doesn't really make much sense. But wouldn't the idea be, like, what's he going to do? Well, oh, we got Donald Trump in there. Now Russia is going to invade the United States. I'm pretty sure that's not what he's planning, if indeed this is the Russian government hacking, which, again, there's no evidence of that. So, you know, who's the burden of proof on? It ain't on anybody to disprove that it's Russia. It's on people to prove that it is Russia. That's the way the burden of proof works. So even if it were true, I don't know what the Democrats are trying to pretend the end goal is of Russia. Like, okay, let's get in Donald Trump because then it's easier for us to take over the U.S. I don't know where they're going with it. And that gets to the main point, which is it really is just fear-mongering 101. It's an attempt to deflect and distract from the substance of the emails and make it so that people think, oh, I can't look at it because if I look at it, well, then I'm helping our enemies? I don't know, something like that. But again, it's the most transparent trick I've ever seen, because even if it were true what they're saying, that doesn't mean the substance of the emails is wrong. No, the substance is still there. The stories are still there. You just want to shove your head in the sand and deflect from it as much as possible, so you're doing the old, I'm going to hack by Russia! You know, if they were really bright, well, this isn't bright, this is also pretty stupid, but you could have gone with the hacked by ISIS. ISIS are the people who did this because they want Donald Trump elected. There. So if you look at it, you're helping ISIS. Like, that's, we're getting close to that level of hacky argument. Now, the main point in this story is what? It's not working. Like, the Democrats think, because who are the people who are most likely to be upset by those leaks and what it says in those leaks? The Democratic, because they're, you know, shitting on Bernie Sanders left and right, calling the liberal base communist effectively when they call them the Red Army, saying, I'm not sure we're for a $15 minimum wage, so on and so forth. So the liberal base are most likely to be annoyed by what's in those leaks. And their argument to try to get the liberal base to not read the leaks is Russia hacked them. You think that argument's going to work on anybody in the liberal base? They're all going to say, but how do you answer for what's in them? If there are people who can agree, okay, yeah, you were hacked, that sucks. But still, how do you answer for what's in the emails? So it's not working on the group that it's intended to work on. The emails are most likely to piss off the liberal base, and your argument for people not to even read the leaks that, oh my God, Russia, is the least likely argument to work on the liberal base. So that leads to the inevitable sad conclusion here that there is no left party anymore. Now, let me explain. So as this is happening and the leaks are damaging Clinton further with the liberal base, the biggest newspaper in Utah, just endorsed her. Now, Utah is literally the most Republican state in the country. Isn't that crazy? And the top newspaper there endorsed Hillary. That's not, like, that never happens ever. They never go left because they're Mormon, by and large, so they're super religious, super fundamentalist. And they endorsed her. At the same time, 13 more former George Bush officials endorsed Hillary. These are two headlines I saw this morning right before I come on air. So you have all these establishment Republicans, and at this point, even just Republicans flocking to Hillary. And you have the base of the Democratic Party looking at the leaks and going, Jesus, man. So many of them, okay, they were going to hold their nose and vote for her, but more information comes out, more information comes out, more information comes out. And they're like, oh, I can't in good faith, dude. Look at what the fuck they say behind closed doors. Look at what their positions actually are. Hillary Clinton admitting, yeah, my Syria policy is going to kill a lot of civilians in Syria, but I support a no-fly zone and safe zones. Like, the list goes on and on of just insane, backwards, terrible ideas. She proves that she's centrist at best, more like center-right. So all this stuff comes out. The base is depressed, and they're like, all right, many of them aren't going to vote. They're going to vote for Jill Stein, or, you know, they're going to, I guess, some vote for Gary Johnson, an even smaller percentage vote for Donald Trump. But she's bleeding millennial support, base support, as she's gaining, yes, Republican support. So you have Donald Trump, who represents this, you know, far-right nationalist wing of the Republican Party, where they really are embracing just out-and-out bigotry and xenophobia and white nationalism. You know, hey, ban all Muslims from coming to the U.S., kick out all undocumented immigrants, so on and so forth. So they believe that. They're like white nationalists mixed in with a little bit of economic populism, you know, with him all anti-TPP, so on and so forth. So that's the far-right nationalist slash pseudo-populist wing of the right. And then you have, like, the centrist slash center-right portion of the country that's in the Democratic Party. Now, those are the two parties, Republican and Democrat. Where the fuck are the leftists supposed to go? Again, some of them are going to hold their nose and vote for Hillary because they say, okay, well, obviously Trump is a bigger threat to the Republic. But where, you know, all the people who actually want a party to represent non-intervention on foreign policy. We did 7 interventions under Obama, who's supposed to be a liberal Democrat. I mean, if you don't want that, where do you go? If you don't want corporate welfare for Wall Street out the wazoo every year, $80 billion, where do you go? If you want somebody to actually fight for a living wage, where do you go? If you want somebody to stand up and fight against climate change in a serious way and not the window dressing of little tweaks here and there, where do you go? So you have this entire, you know, group of people that are left out of the two major parties. I get it, by the way. Yes, of course, the Green Party represents those values much more. But again, what everybody needs to understand is that our system is, like, literally designed for two parties. So a third-party option, unfortunately, is certainly not viable in the short run. And don't get me wrong, I'm voting for Jill here in New York, but in the swing state, it'd be a much more difficult thing to do because that actually is taking away a vote from the lesser of two evils and making it more likely the greater evil will win. But that's a longer conversation we don't need to get into right now. Bottom line is, actual progressives and liberals are snubbed by the two major parties. And that's a sad state of affairs. That's a sad state of affairs. And you see the Democrats, I mean, people have been saying this for a while. Now I think it's undeniable and irrefutable that the Democratic Party is what the Republican Party used to be. Again, the Republican Party, they were, anti-Soviet 101 in their sentiment during the Cold War. Now it's the Democrats doing that. The new version of the Cold War, the rhetoric that escalates with Russia, sometimes just absolutely needlessly, That's not to say Russia's good with the whole situation in Crimea and you name it, but yeah, they're escalating with them and they continue to escalate with them. That's what Republicans used to do. President Obama with Obamacare, that's an individual mandate system. That used to be a Republican plan. It was originally a Republican plan. Richard Nixon's plan, Bob Dole's plan, the Heritage Foundation, which is a right-wing think tank, Newt Gingrich and Chuck Grassley and well-known Republicans used to support this to oppose single payer, which was the Democrats' plan. You name it, man. There have been so many examples of the Democrats now being what the Republicans used to be, cap and trade, you know, as a plan to deal with climate change. Well, it was cap and trade that the Republicans supported to deal with acid rain. So this is where we're at. We're at a situation where there is no more left party, and the Democrats are using old Republican tricks to try to get their center-right candidate elected. Okay. So I'm going to do a massively depressing segment for everybody here because I'm going to describe to you how I now believe this is absolutely positively a no-win election for people who are liberals. So I don't even need to get into this part too much because I think it's patently obvious, but if Donald Trump wins, obviously it's a disaster. Now, inexplicably, some people who listen to my show support Trump. You're going to have to talk to them as to why that is, but there's two ways it could go if Donald Trump gets elected, I think. One of them is a little bit counterintuitive. One of them is that he ends up being the single most establishment president we've ever had. Now, again, you're thinking, what? Well, the reason why that's a very real possibility is you have to look at his history. Donald Trump's history is actually just riddled with examples of that being all that he wants. All he wants is recognition from the elites. He wants to be an elitist more than anybody on the planet, and he ends up doing it in kind of the most tacky ways imaginable, where he builds a house and has a fucking room full of gold, and he acts like he's, oh yeah, no, totally, I'm with the country club crowd, I'm rich and I'm successful and I'm powerful. But he's always kind of been a wannabe because he's not that bright. He inherited a shitload of money from his daddy. He's a terrible businessman, as has been proven with the 1995 tax records, among other things. So he's always kind of been that, like, Richie Rich to an extent, I guess you could say. This kid who's not that smart, not that talented, sees his dad as successful, wants to be like his dad. And then as he grows, he wants that elitist recognition more than anything. He wants to be viewed as that, you know, extremely successful businessman. And he wants the pat on the back from the Mitt Romney crowd and stuff like that. So there's a chance that he'll do exactly what the establishment tells him and exactly what the Republican establishment tells him, which would mean he'd be just as disastrous as any Republican president ever, which is terrible. Like, think about the fact that he keeps saying, oh, I'll appoint John Bolton to be in charge of my foreign policy. John Bolton is the worst neocon, arguably worse than fucking Dick Cheney. The guy never met an intervention he doesn't like. There's other neocons that have now come to work for him. Now, a lot of neocons like Hillary, so that's terrible too. But with Trump, this idea that, well, no, he'll actually be a maverick, like they used to call John McCain. It's very possible he is the most establishment Republican ever. And another story that's a big piece of evidence on this front was a story that broke at the end of the primary when apparently people in Trump's campaign went to John Kasich and told John Kasich, look, man, here's the deal. We want you to be VP, and with you being VP, you're basically going to run the country. Don is just going to go around giving speeches and doing his thing about making America great again and being the salesman for the office. But you are basically going to run the country as VP. What do you say? And Kasich said, no, he didn't want to be associated with Trump. So think about that. That's strong evidence that he's going to be the most establishment president ever if he were to win. That's one distinct possibility. The other possibility is he goes rogue. He is that wild card. And if indeed he is that wild card, everything in his history tells me he would be a disastrous president, perhaps even more so than if he just acted in an establishment way. Why do I say that? He's super impulsive. I mean, it really is true that his temperament is comical. Sam Harris has a great way of describing how he views Trump's mind, and you can tell by when he talks that this is the case. It's like taking a balloon. You blow up a balloon, and then you let it go in a room, and then, it hits the ground. That's Trump's mind. Like, he'll start a sentence, and he doesn't know where the fuck it's going to end up. He just goes. It's like, oh, I'm thinking about this, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, he'll say a word that branches off into a different direction, and then next thing you know, he's going in a different direction. You're like, whoa, what the fuck just happened here? So he's not a bright guy, and then you have, like, he said stuff along the lines of, I'm the king of debt. You know, if I'm president of America, I'll just make a deal on our debt. Okay, that's not, like, he's taking his shitty business experience and trying to relate that to the country. That's not an apt comparison. You can't do that. Because what did he do with many of his businesses? Well, just declare business bankruptcy. You run out the back door with all the money, and everybody's screwed. All the workers are screwed. Well, if you were to do that for the U.S., the people would be screwed, and you'd declare the U.S. insolvent, and then there's a worldwide depression because the dollar is the world reserve currency, and he's not fit to fucking run a world economy. He doesn't know dick about this stuff. He's proven – during the primary, it was a pretty big story that when he was doing a radio interview with Hugh Hewitt, he didn't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah. Look, you might not know the difference, but you're not running for president. You need to know that if you're going to run for president. There were indications he didn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia. That's unacceptable. He's massively, massively, massively ignorant, and the few ideas he does express are unbelievably stupid. Even the idea of, like, okay, we're going to bring back torture, and we're going to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work, and we're going to do worse than waterboarding. We're going to pull out of the Geneva Conventions. Even as hideous as the neocons were, and they did a lot of that stuff, they were at least smart enough to understand you can't say you're doing that stuff, because if you do, you set an official precedent to the world that now you get to do all the shit that now we're saying we do. So even though they were doing horrific things, they said it's enhanced interrogation, it's not torture. Because they're not dumb enough to say it's torture, because then they know it's a green light for everybody in the world to fucking torture. So, on the one hand, you could say props for honesty for Trump saying I'm going to be a horrible person. But on the other hand, you do not know the path you're taking the world down. So, there's just endless examples of if Trump wins, a disaster. Again, I don't know, I said I'm not going to get into it. Apparently I got into it here. The list goes on and on. I'm going to lower wages. I'm going to, you know, hey, I'm against free trade. But hold on, you outsource your own jobs to Turkey, to China, to Mexico. You do it all the fucking time. Well, yeah, I'm going to change that. By the way, I'm against those deals, NAFTA and the World Trade Organization more broadly, and obviously TPP. I'm against all of them. But do I trust that he would get us out of those deals? No, that's number one. Number two is, do I trust that he would renegotiate them in a way where it wouldn't cause a trade war immediately? No, because he's an idiot. Of course I don't think he's going to negotiate his way out of it in a reasonable way. He's Donald fucking Trump. I think I've made my point here that if he wins, forget it. Never mind all the obvious ban all Muslims from coming to the U.S., kick out all undocumented immigrants. Just bigotry 101. It's craziness. It's not even logistically possible to kick out all undocumented immigrants. But I don't doubt he might try it. So if he wins, terrible. But then if Hillary wins, oh boy. If Hillary wins and she wins in a landslide, which, by the way, as of right now, appears to be the most likely scenario. I think Nate Silver has it at 83 or 89% that Hillary wins. There was a time a while back he had it at that number, and I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, and I explained why I thought that was wrong. Today, is that wrong? If he's off, he's only off by a little bit. Maybe I go I'm more conservative than him on my predictions. Maybe I go 70% chance Hillary wins at this point, given the polls. So either way, if Hillary Clinton wins, and she wins in a landslide, which is the most likely scenario right now, you basically put in stone that this Democratic Party is the shittiest Democratic Party and will continue to be the shittiest Democratic Party as far as the eye can see. Why? Because what lesson do they take away from it if Hillary wins in a landslide? What's their lesson? Oh, so we did everything right. Okay, but so what did you do? You saw what they did. They jacked the nomination from Bernie Sanders and tipped the scale in Hillary Clinton's favor. They had the whole DNC working for Hillary. they in the general, oh, forget it. She decided it was a good strategy to run as far right as possible, do speeches with neocons on stage praising her. Story came out today, 13 George Bush officials, more George Bush officials endorsed her. She pandered in Utah and spoke about how religion is so important to fundamentalist Mormons. Today we learned the biggest newspaper in Utah endorsed her. She say, okay, we got to be more hawkish. The America's got to have a stronger backbone here. This is what we got to do. So she goes around, uses right-wing arguments, you know, it doubles down on this triangulation New Democrat strategy, this neoliberal strategy of let's be more hawkish, let's be more in favor of Wall Street than what a Democrat should be, and let's go in that direction. And if she wins in a landslide after doing that, if she wins in a landslide after all criticism in the WikiLeaks documents to Russia hacked us, so ignore everything. If she does that, well, then that only means that the Democratic Party from here on out, you're going to keep getting candidates that say, well, that was the model that won, so let's do that. Just like with Bill Clinton back in 1992. Oh, he ran as a centrist, a neoliberal. You know, he was the new Democrat who's so reasonable, and I agree with both the Republicans and the Democrats from time to time. Well, then ever since then, and this would they'd double down and triple down on it if Hillary won, that's what they're going to do. So the Bernie Sanders-style Democrat will continue to be crushed within that system. So this is a no-win election. The best case scenario, which isn't going to happen, would obviously be a Jill Stein presidency, but she's not even on the ballot in every state, and she's polling at 3%. It's not going to happen. So Gary Johnson's not going to happen either. Yada, yada. We don't need to get into that. So it's going to be Trump or Hillary. The best case scenario you can hope for at this point is a slim Hillary Clinton victory. I am in the camp that says I think Hillary is slightly less evil than Donald Trump. Not enough for me to vote for her in New York. I'm a safe state. I don't need to vote for her. I'll go vote for Jill Stein. But so I do think I will be less scared on Election Day if she wins than if Trump wins by a little bit. So I guess the best case scenario is if Hillary Clinton wins by a little bit, so that maybe, just maybe, there will be some sort of self-reflection where they go, we almost lost to the most unpopular nominee in American history. That's literal. Donald Trump, most unpopular in U.S. history. So maybe we should reevaluate how we govern and what our strategy is here. But even then, it might not happen. That's the best case scenario. And even then, you can sense the hubris and the arrogance of the Clintons where they would say, yeah, but no, we won. So, okay, the same strategy moving here out, you know, for the Democratic establishment, for the DNC. Yes, well, this is what we do. We're the centrist, center-right party. We love corporatism. We love being hawkish. This is what it is. So you get the sense that this is a no-win election. Hillary wins, we're fucked. Too hawkish, she's too corporatist, she's too corrupt. Donald Trump wins, we're fucked for all the reasons I laid out. The margins, you know, at this point, I don't even think it's possible that Trump would win in a landslide. But if Hillary wins in a landslide, they double down and triple down on neoliberalism. She wins by a little bit. You just got to hope there's some reflection. But I don't even know if that's the case because, again, what happened after Bernie Sanders nearly beat her? Nobody knew fucking Bernie Sanders except the biggest political junkies. He went from nobody knowing him to getting, what, 47% of the vote in the primary against Hillary when she had all the name recognition in the world and the entire DNC behind her and the media despising Bernie Sanders. Somehow Bernie got 47%. That still wasn't enough for Hillary to say, damn, I need to reevaluate my strategy here and maybe continue to be progressive in the general. Nope, she went right. So even if she does just edge out a victory, there's a chance that this continues to be the furthest right-wing Democratic Party, which means the ultimate conclusion is we're going to have to fight the battles in the off-season. It's almost like the elections matter the least because it's always a matter of lesser of two evils. So if that's the case, then all the actual issues-focused movements are the most important, where you apply pressure to the Democratic Party. Like they said in the emails that were leaked, the Podesta emails, they're like, okay, we're not feeling any pressure on this issue, Nate, with the $15 minimum wage in that case, so I guess we're not going to act on it. In other words, if they apply pressure to us, we're going to fucking act on it. Yes, so apply pressure endlessly, constantly on all the important issues. Single-payer healthcare, too many wars, climate change. Apply pressure. Go, 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 go. And the most important movement, of course, is to just totally redo the system, start from scratch, get the money out of the system, which makes the entire system corrupt, where the politicians represent the corporations and the wealthy and not you. We got to fight to get that amendment to get the money out of the system, because if we do that, then we can actually have a battle of competing philosophies in the different parties, as opposed to right now, it's a battle of competing donors. Whose donors are going to get more represented, the Democratic donors or the Republican donors? In both cases, the constituents get snubbed today. They're representing special interests, just slightly different special interests, and sometimes the same special interests. If we get the money out of the system, well, then we maybe would have just a competing philosophy election where it's a character who's akin to Bernie Sanders, who's an actual progressive, versus maybe a character like Ron Paul used to be, a libertarian who actually believes in the message. I'd love to have that kind of a political system and not one that's just drowning in corporate money. So the real answer is to continue to fight every step of the way. Even when nobody else is fighting, we got to put in the work when it's not an election year, because that's the only way we can really get systemic fundamental change, or else it's always going to be a choice between the lesser of two evils, and we're going to be perpetually depressed. Okay. All right, let's move on here. So Donald Trump tweaked his original tax plan because it added about $11 trillion to the debt over 10 years. Well, his new plan is a dumpster fire also. Now, I'm going to get to that in a second, but let me just explain for his first tax plan how silly of a human being he is, because he would go around arguing, we're going to balance the budget. That's what we're going to do. There's going to be no more debt. Tremendous. Believe me. Let me just tell you. So he would go around saying that, and then economists would crunch the numbers, and they go, dude, what are you talking about? If you implemented your plan to a T, you would get $11 trillion more in debt over 10 years, over $1 trillion more per year. So he's, I'm going to balance the budget. Okay, no, but your numbers show you're going to increase the debt by astonishing numbers. But what do they always say? Their response is goofy as always, is what the Republicans do. They go, oh, no, no, no. See, you economists with your numbers and facts don't understand. If we do my plan, we will unleash the beast of the free market, and there will be so many jobs created everywhere and so much wealth and prosperity that even though we lower the tax rate, people make so much more money that with the lower tax rate, they're paying more money to the government, and the government gets more revenue. Boom, we eliminate the debt. They make it up. By the way, this is why George H.W. Bush, Bush daddy version, called, this plan by Republicans, and he is a Republican, but he said, look, that idea, it's voodoo economics. Because it doesn't work. It's fucking voodoo. We're going to cut taxes, and that's somehow going to balance the budget. No, if you cut taxes, you are, by definition, cutting the amount of money going into the government. So you're going to increase the debt and the deficit. George H.W. Bush realized that. He's like, that's voodoo. That's not going to work. What are you, crazy? That's not how fucking math works, you idiots. Even H.W. recognized that. Trump, no. He drank the voodoo economics Kool-Aid, which is also called trickle-down economics or Reaganomics. Okay. So with that being said, Zach Carter breaks this down for us. This is Trump's new tax plan. Quote, the tax plan Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump unveiled last month would cost $7.2 trillion over the next decade, according to an analysis from a nonpartisan think tank, with most of the benefits flowing to the wealthy. Trump's tax plan would eliminate the tax on multi-million dollar inheritances, cap all business taxes at 15%, and reduce income taxes across the board. But the Tax Policy Center found the plan to be heavily weighted in favor of the super rich. The top 1% of households would receive an average tax cut of $214,690 in just the first year of the plan's implementation, while the top 0.1% would save a whopping $1.1 million. Middle-income households would receive a tax cut of just $1,010, while the lowest-income taxpayers would get just $110. Okay, so let me put this in perspective for you guys. They're saying, okay, not only does this mostly favor the rich, it mostly favors the super rich. And when you compare it to the epic, disastrous, infamous George W. Bush tax cuts, it's way worse than that. So for George W. Bush, the tax cuts cost about $2.8 trillion over the first decade. Again, with Trump, it is now, after reducing it from $11 trillion, it's now $7.2 trillion. This guy is the biggest faux populist ever. Now, don't get me wrong. His rhetoric on TPP and trade is actually decent. But let me be clear. I don't believe him. He outsources his own jobs to Turkey and China and Mexico.
Oh, we got to put jobs in America. That's what we need. That's what we're going to do. This is what Trump is all about.
Then why do you outsource your own jobs? You could bring them back. You're not forced to do that. You chose to do that. And I'm supposed to believe you're going to make every business in the country bring the jobs back? I don't believe that. And furthermore, if you renegotiate the deals, I don't believe you do it in a way that wouldn't cause a trade war. I think you would cause a trade war because you're not that bright. So that's the extent of his economic populism. I think it's a ruse. Now this, he's not even pretending it for this one. For this one, he's like, yeah, no, my plan is the Bush tax cuts for the rich on steroids. That's my plan. That's the goal. You go through his numbers, you go, oh, he doesn't want any estate tax. The estate tax, for those of you who don't know, it is a tax on mega-rich dead people. There's not a better group in society to tax than mega-rich dead people. And to be clear, it only affects like 0.1% of the population. And it's not like the kids don't get anything. You're still going to have your Paris Hiltons who are massively rich and get the money passed off to them. So that's like the least liberal and progressive thing you could do is get rid of the estate tax. He's like, let's get rid of the estate tax. You know, he says, reduce the taxes on the rich the most. And comically say, again, I'm going to balance the budget, as you just added $7.2 trillion to the debt. So they're so silly. Like, they don't get math. They don't get economics. They don't care, man. They just don't care. And these are the same people who, as he's going to add $7.2 trillion to the debt, he gets mad at Obama for reducing the annual deficit. They like to cite this statistic. Well, yeah, but the national debt has gone up a lot under Obama. Yeah. He inherited a $1.4 trillion annual deficit. So he inherited that, and what did he do with it? He immediately started cutting it. So he was handed the Great Recession and massive annual deficits. He turned that into not the Great Recession anymore, and now the debt is about $500 billion when he inherited $1.4 trillion. So yes, you are cumulatively adding to the national debt, but that is massively misleading because he is on a year-by-year basis, he has improved it every single year. So they're super misleading about Obama's record on this. And then they say, we're going to balance the budget, which doesn't just get rid of the annual deficit. He means get rid of the national debt, which isn't even possible if you talk to economists. That's not a thing you could do in such a short period of time. They do that, and they add $7.2 trillion over 10 years. And they act like they're going to be better, and it's going to balance the budget, and they're going to help the middle class and the poor the most when they help them the least. By the way, his old tax plan increased taxes on the middle class and the poor. Now, the new tax plan, he's like, okay, I'll give you a little bit. To poor people, here's $100. But rich people take over $1 million. Guys, they're fucking tricking you. Reaganomics is nothing but a giant trick. What they're doing is handing all the money in society to the rich and screwing over poor middle-class people more. This isn't populist. This isn't liberal. This isn't progressive. This is George W. Bush tax cuts for the rich on steroids, and Donald Trump is proposing it. All right, let's go to the dumbest governor in the country. Let me set this up for you. The governor of Maine, Paul LePage, has now taken over the record of being the dumbest governor in America. And I say that because he went on a radio show to discuss the election, and look at what he said about Donald Trump.
Sometimes I wonder that our Constitution is not only broken, but it needs to, we need a Donald Trump to show some authoritarian power in our country and bring back the rule of law, because we've had 8 years of a president that just He's an autocrat. He just does it on his own. He ignores Congress, and we're slipping every single day. We're slipping into anarchy, and I just think that 4 more years of a similar mentality is going to destroy this nation.
That is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. He's a governor, and he has no idea about political ideologies and philosophies. He's apparently unaware of what a hypocrite is and what a contradiction is. He fails Logic 101. And by the way, he goes on to say later on in the interview, that when they're talking about the sex lives of Trump and Bill Clinton, the host is like, okay, look, you're attacking Bill Clinton for things that he did before Donald Trump said these things on the bus and allegedly did these sexual assaults. So the host goes, you shouldn't throw stones if you live in a glass house. And LePage responds, I've been doing it all my life. Wait, what? It's like I need to wash my brain when it gets hit with that much stupid. So in other words, when I do it, so if I, you know, have sexual scandals, or Trump does, he's locker room talk. If Bill Clinton has them, let's talk about it endlessly. So he said, yeah, I throw stones and I live in a glass house. I don't give a fuck. It's like, you know what this reminds me of? I've experienced this in my life before, where you're having conversations with people who keep it real. They're just not that bright. And, like, you'll make a point that directly refutes what they're saying, and they just right over their head, and they act like it doesn't do that. So the point, nothing's landing. It's hitting a fucking concrete wall. They have a cinder block for a head. You say something that's true, and it just... Anyway, like I was saying, it's like the people you talk to where they wait to talk in the conversation. They're not listening to your response. Like, they'll ask you a question, seemingly wanting a response, then you start responding, and they're shut off, and they're just waiting to say the next thing. He's just such a stupid person. Like, how stupid are you to say these things? So let's walk through that. He goes, the Constitution is broken. Okay. Then he moves to, we need Trump to show authoritarian power. Okay, hey, dipshit, that would further break the Constitution. The Constitution is against authoritarian power. That's the point of it. God, you're so stupid. Oh, my God, it hurts. It hurts to talk about how stupid he is.
You know, the Constitution is broken. We need somebody to come in there and act more unconstitutionally.
That's what you're saying. You're too stupid to realize that's what you're saying, but that's what you're saying. And then he goes, so Trump needs to show authoritarian power to bring back the rule of law. But again, hold on. Authoritarian power, by its nature, is against rule of law. Because authoritarian power means I'm above the law, and I am the law. I'm the sole arbiter of the law. So, you know, the other branches of government don't matter. So I call all the shots. That's fascism. That's what that is. This is authoritarianism. He goes, we need authoritarianism to bring back rule of law. So we need to break the law to bring back the law. Oh, this is so stupid. And then he goes to, Trump needs to show authoritarian power to bring back the rule of law because Obama is an authoritarian. What? What the fuck are you saying? He calls Obama an autocrat. That means an authoritarian. It means the same thing. So he's saying the Constitution is broken. Let's further break it by having Trump go in there and act authoritarian. Even though that in his mind that's not breaking it, that's making it better. So we need Trump to be an authoritarian to bring back the rule of law, even though that breaks the rule of law. And this is all necessary because Obama's an authoritarian. What the fuckity fuck fuck fuck? So let me break that down to, you know, as simple as possible. When people I don't like are authoritarian, even if they might not even be authoritarian, I'm going to call them authoritarian. So if I don't like you, you're authoritarian. And that's bad. But if I agree with you and you're an authoritarian, great! This is literally the most unreflective, thoughtful human being I've ever heard in politics in the United States of America. And that's saying a lot. This guy makes Rush Limbaugh look like Noam Chomsky. All right, and there's the one more part which I'm currently blanking on, so I got to hear the end of it again. Forgive me for this.
Sometimes I say, we're slipping into anarchy.
Oh, anarchy.
I just think after 4 more years of a similar mentality is going to day. We're slipping into anarchy.
Hold on,
and he does it on his own. He ignores Congress, and we're
He also says, well, Obama ignores Congress. That's terrible. Dude, but you're asking Trump to ignore Congress. You just said you want him to be authoritarian. That would ignore Congress. And then at the end, randomly slips it in there because he's, again, a silly person. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Anarchy. Oh, you don't know anything about political definitions. Authoritarianism is good when Trump does it, bad when Obama does it, and Obama is a fucking anarchist. Which is it? Is he authoritarian or anarchist? Is he authoritarian or anarchist? I can't. I give up. I give up. I don't know why I cover politics. I don't know why I bother. I want to shove my head in a fucking meat grinder after listening to shit like this. Okay. All right. He's so stupid. He doesn't know anything. All right. I got to stop, man. I got to stop. Like, God, you know, I shouldn't be one to complain for people who love to hear the sound of their own voice, but it's just like he's talking for the sake of talking, and at no point is there anything logical in there. It's just fucking verbal diarrhea all over the place. All right, I gotta go to Mike Pence here. Oh, okay. Mike Pence did an event on the campaign trail, and he got a really sad question. Let's watch.
Our lives depend on this election. Our kids' futures depend on this election. And I will tell you, just for me, and I don't want this to happen, but I will tell you for me personally, if Hillary Clinton gets in, I'm ready for a revolution because we can't have her in.
Yeah, you don't
say. But I'm just saying it. No, you know, I'm like Trump. You know, I might not speak for people here. Do I mind not saying the truth, guys? Come on.
Yeah, there's a revolution coming on November the 8th. I promise you.
What are we going to do to safeguard our votes? Because
look,
we see now the Democratic Party is just crooked, crooked, crooked.
Well, look.
Okay, I have a lot to say about this. So first of all, I do want to give credit to Pence real fast for saying, don't say that. And it appeared to be like a visceral reaction when he heard her say that. When she says, look, if Trump doesn't win, revolution. And it was almost like he couldn't stop himself. He was like, oh, don't say that. Come on now. Don't say that. So I agree with Mike Pence on probably 0% of shit. He's a Rush Limbaugh protege. He doesn't believe in evolution, doesn't believe in climate change. He's almost equally as crazy as Trump, but he puts a better face on it. But you do have to give credit where credit is due, and it's good that he said don't say that. And it reminded me of, remember when John McCain was doing, when he was running against Obama, and he was doing an event, and some hysterical woman in the audience basically said, Obama, I won't let you know, he's a Muslim. He said either he's a Muslim or he's an Arab or something to that effect. And McCain's response, which, by the way, looking back on it, is disastrous because of the implications. He goes, no, he's a good person. In other words, a Muslim can't be a good person, an Arab can't be a good person. So that's a disaster. But what he was trying to say and couldn't say it in a smart way is, okay, calm down a little bit with your conspiracies and you're going too far. That's not helpful and that's not accurate. So, and I got the sense that's what Pence is saying here, like, revolution, really? You and Cletus are going to come out of Arkansas from the woods with a Ruger 22 and take out a nuclear-armed government? Pipe down. So credit for that. Now, the other thing that was the main takeaway there, and I'll get to her silliness in a second, but the other thing is I do get the sense that people are fucking hurting, man. They're hurting. And Noam Chomsky actually made this point a lot where he said, yeah, okay, people on the left, you can mock the Tea Party and all that stuff, and that makes sense because their ideas and their solutions are ridiculous and they don't know what they're talking about, so on and so forth. But that exists because people are fucking hurting. It's not just bigotry and xenophobia. That is a part of it, and that is motivating some of the people, and it is the primary motivator for some of the people. No denying that. But for a lot of people, it really is the case, hey, I lived in a factory town, and we made a middle-class living, and then you fucking shut down the factory and shipped it to China, and now we're all broke. And now we're hurting, and now we have no purpose, and now we need help, and we need it now. And what is the establishment doing? The Democrats and the Republicans are saying, well, let's do TPP and ship more jobs overseas. So my takeaway from that is, yes, she's, you know, doesn't have the right solutions and she's off her rocker. But to me, if you heard that woman's story, I'm sure you'd sympathize with it. I'm sure she'd tell you something that you can relate to. I lost my job, my husband's on disability, whatever the fuck it is, there's something going on there where there's real pain. So I feel bad for her, and I want to help her, even though I don't agree with her. Then the third thing here is, at the end, it's the misplaced anger that drives me crazy. Because, so she's ranting against the Democratic Party. Everybody knows I despise the Democratic Party. But in her mind, the solution is the Republican Party. No, 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 no. Yes, the Democratic Party is, quote, crooked, 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 as you said. What the fuck do you think the Republican Party is? You think it's the solution. It's not the solution. They've led the charge in ruining your life this entire time. Because at least with the Democratic Party, and they are corrupt, don't get me wrong, but at least they throw you a bone every now and then. At least they, every once in a while, they go, oh, you know, we do have a real problem here with issue X, Y, or Z. Okay, let's address it. You know, President Obama, for example, changed the overtime rules to make it so that more people get overtime pay. It was the Democrats who were pushing for raising the minimum wage. That's going to help people like this woman. You know, the list goes on and on. On social issues, now social issues, I'm sure they disagree. But while the Democrats are being shitty sellouts to Wall Street, yes, they do sprinkle in some social liberalism, which is nice. President Obama saying, okay, I'm going to release more nonviolent drug offenders. That's good. That's the right thing to do. Gay marriage, I agree with that. This woman probably doesn't agree with it, but hey, I think that's a good thing to do. So the Democrats, massively corrupt, 80% corrupt, 20% of the time not so bad. The Republicans, 100% of the time bad. And I mean that. I'm serious about that. They supported, overwhelmingly, every single outsourcing deal. The things that are probably most responsible for hurting this woman and people she knows. They supported deregulation. Again, this is an area where the Democrats are slightly better. They still suck. They're still sold out to Wall Street. There will still be massive loopholes in the regulation they pass. But at least there's regulation from them to try to prevent the next crash. The Republicans go, woo, fuck this bitch. Let's ride it into the rocks. Get rid of all the rules. Trump himself says, yeah, I want to get rid of Dodd-Frank. Dodd-Frank has a million problems. The answer is not repealing it. That'll make it worse. So he says get rid of the FDA, get rid of the EPA, fuck all these regulations. Oh, who cares? You get salmonella and die, it is what it is. You get E. coli in your food, whatevs, dude. I wanted to get rid of the food police. Get rid of all the regulation. This idea that since the Democrats are crooked, the Republicans are the answer, is the dumbest idea because it's nowhere near true. Because when you look at the history of it, the Republicans are even more sold out. The Republicans, the whole point of the Republican Party is to be a front for corporate America. That mixed in with social conservatism, mixed in with, you know, fundamentalist Christianity. It's Bill Maher's great line. The Republican Party is full of flat earthers and Civil War reenactors and religious lunatics. So they sell out to corporations, plus you put that on top of it. You think fucking Ted Cruz is coming to save the day? He ain't saving the day for shit. You think Donald Trump is coming to save the day? The fucking narcissistic idiot fascist? He's not going to save shit. So I sympathize with this woman, but the solutions have to be right. And then finally, the answer is to get money out of the system. I mean, because that's the only way you're going to get politicians to represent you. Right now, they're going to represent their special interests, and the Democrats and the Republicans have some shared special interests, like Wall Street. Sometimes they have different special interests. Republicans more ExxonMobil and big oil, Democrats more unions and you know, teachers and stuff like that, so and lawyers. So there's different special interests, but they're both representing their special interests and snubbing the constituents. So the answer is to get money out of the system. And you're not going to have anything that fixes this poor woman's life until that's the case. Everything else will be window dressing and tweaks around the edges. But I can guarantee you the answers are certainly never going to come from the Republican Party, and she seems to think that's the answer. All right, now, let's go to Blake Farenthold, who's a Republican representative, and you got to hear what this guy said, man. You got to hear what he said while talking to Chris Hayes, if I have the fucking clip. Yes, I have it. Okay. Here we go. Republican Representative Blake Farenthold went on Chris Hayes' show on MSNBC, and he said something that's unbelievable, even by the standards of this wild election.
Until he does something so bad, I need to make him worse than Hillary. I'm still in.
Okay, so why did they withdraw his support? It seems to be they withdrew his support because he was caught on tape bragging about serial sexual assault. That was not enough for you to withdraw your support, but you do recognize that that's what he was doing, correct?
No, I think this was a locker room talk that happened 10 years ago that he's apologized for. It was a private conversation that was off the record.
If someone off the record in a locker room, this was not in a locker room, it was a workplace, said, I really like raping women, would that be locker room talk?
Again, it depends. You don't know the entire context.
But you would be fine with that.
I'm not here to defend Donald Trump. I don't like what he said.
If a tape came out with Donald Trump saying that,
himself on that.
If a tape came out with Donald Trump saying that, saying I really like to rape women, you would continue to endorse it.
Again, it would. That would be bad, and I would have to consider it. But again, we're talking about what Donald Trump said 10 years ago.
Oh, dude, what have you done? What have you done? You know, somebody is an admitted rapist, and he says on tape, I like to rape women. Would you unendorse? Well, it would be, like, bad. And I would have to, like, consider it. Take it under advisement. Stop. So, obviously, after this... The world lit on fire, and then he rushes onto Twitter. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that rapists are, I might endorse a rapist, blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, God, sweet Jesus, look at what we've come to in this country. This election is so crazy that we have rape apologists who can just say whatever the fuck they want on TV. Okay, now, again, to be fair to him, later on he apologized, but that shows you, like, the only acceptable answer in that situation is, of course I would unendorse him. He's a rapist! But no, he couldn't bring himself to do it because everybody's, oh, I'm playing for a team. Team red, team blue, yay! Stop. Why does everybody have to be a silly person? Stop being a silly person. Go evaluate based off the issues. Now, so this is unbelievably stupid, and that's cretinous and all these horrible things. I am amazed, though, still to this day, and perhaps it's because I'm naive politically. But so that... Everybody's on the same page. What the fuck did you just say, son? You just said maybe you would still endorse somebody who is an admitted rapist? What the fuck are you saying? So that, everybody agrees. Terrible, horrible, worst thing in the world. And I'm with you, of course. Why wasn't that also the case when Donald Trump said, quote, we have to take out their families. We have to take out their families. Remember, he's having it on Fox and Friends. While talking about terrorists, he's talking about ISIS, and then they ask him about civilian casualties, and he says, no, I am going to target them on purpose. We have to take out their families. We have to take out their families. He repeated it 3 times. Like, the point should be to kill civilians in the Middle East. So, on the hierarchy here, supporting a rapist, everybody agrees, worst possible thing imaginable. Supporting a terrorist, debatable. Debatable. People on the right, there was a fucking whimper in the news media. I'm not even sure that got a lot of coverage on CNN and MSNBC. They're too busy talking about, oh, he uses naughty words, and I don't like that. It's really bad. Meanwhile, the dude said, yeah, murder. I like murder. Let's take out the families. Let's fucking be terrorists. Let's declare the United States as an official terrorist nation by saying the whole point is to target civilians. Not collateral damage, not whoops, we tried to get a Taliban guy and 12 civilians were in the area, but no, the whole point, I'm going to aim at civilians and kill them. Barely a fucking whimper. Barely a whimper in the media. So, rapist, unacceptable, terrorist, 50-50. 50-50. Torture, that's another thing, just so casual. Yeah, I'm going to bring back waterboarding. I'm going to bring back worse than waterboarding, and guess what? I'm going to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. And I'm going to pull out of the Geneva Conventions. So I'm just a sadistic motherfucker who I'm torturing for the sake of torturing because I like torturing, not even because I'm trying to get information. I just said, even if it doesn't work, I'm going to torture. Everybody in the media? The guy is single-handedly destroying what's supposed to be American values. and there was no scandal to be found. But then somebody made a good point to me on Twitter. I don't remember who it was, but they said, really, you don't get the difference? The difference is simple. When Donald Trump was talking about sexually assaulting women, I don't even ask. I don't ask for permission. No, I just do it. Sometimes I grab him by the pussy. I start kissing him. Sometimes I just start kissing him. It's like a magnet. When he was doing that, who was he talking about? He's talking about white women. When you talk about taking out their families, whose families are you talking about? You're talking about ISIS families. So people go, guilty enough. Kill the family of the terrorist. The family's got nothing to do with it, right? Should we go drone Dylan Roof's mom's house? It's fucking crazy. Of course not. Why would it be different for, a terrorist in the Middle East? Because they don't view they don't view them as human. They view it as less than that. So it's brown people in a Middle Eastern country. They don't even fucking speak the language. What are you going to do? You kill them and you kill them. It is what it is. It's debatable. That's the view. So when it was a scandal involving brown people in the Middle East, scandal involving torturing suspected terrorists, suspected. Again, we know a lot of the people at Guantanamo were, of course, not guilty. That's been proven. Suspected? Close enough. Close enough. When it's white women, sexual assault, oh, the world's over. This is fucking crazy. Oh, my God, this is insane. Why can't we go back to being reasonable, like talking about killing innocent brown people in the Middle East? No, they're both horrific and disastrous and disgusting. It's weird how some things blow up and some things don't blow up. But I would like to see the same outrage mustered up over this comment, which it's right. Believe me, I agree. This is rightful anger, believe me. But that should also be the case for when he says, let's kill civilians, let's torture, and all that stuff. Unfortunately, our outrage meter is a little broken, and it's super obvious to me. All right, next. Republican Congressman Trent Franks spoke to CNN about the election, and he had a interesting response to Donald Trump's admitting that he gropes women. So here's what he said. Quote, well, the left has coarsened this culture in every way imaginable. It is okay for adult men to walk into little girls' rooms. It is okay to stand by with a golf club in your hand and watch ISIS sell little six-year-old girls into slavery for 60 cents. All right, let's pause. What the fuck are you talking about, son? So, again, he's asked about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump saying, I don't even ask. I grab him by the pussy. That's what I do. I give me Tic Tacs because sometimes I just start kissing women. I can't help it. I just start kissing them. He's asked about that. His response is, well, you know, the left. Hashtag deflection, bitch. Can you be honest for a second here and have a real conversation about that issue? You want to talk about other issues? We'll get to that. But talk about this issue. Nope, deflection immediately. Well, the left, go that way, coarsen this culture, and it's okay for men to walk into little girls' rooms. The fuck are you talking about? You know what he's referring to? Transgender bathrooms. Here we go again. Right, see, in his mind, that's the same. A guy forcing himself onto women with no consent, or at best case scenario, a massive gray area of consent. That's about equal to a transgender person using the bathroom. Like, how did they get their minds to that position? It seems so obviously absurd on the face of it. But no, in their mind, they think, well, every transgender person who would go into the bathroom of their choice, there's obviously nefarious motives. They're obviously trying to be sexual predators. Except how much evidence is there of that? Zero! Zero cases of that. Zero, literally. How many cases are there of transgender people just using the bathroom and going about their business and just acting like a human being? That's what happens every time. So this is a made-up thing, this made-up scandal of like, well, you're going to be predators who do this. But that hasn't happened. And furthermore, what do you want them to do? Like, so after when somebody's a transgender person, you do realize the weirder thing would be if they went into the bathroom of their original gender, because then you have somebody that looks 100% like a female walking into a male bathroom and vice versa. That would be the thing where people go, whoa, 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 what's happening here? So this isn't thought through, and it's really trivializing actual sexual assault
because you want to make a stupid political point about how you're not cool with transgender bathrooms. Why is it so hard for people to get this idea that transgenderism is a thing? So it's not like they think it's made up. No, but there are people who are born male, and in every imaginable way, they feel female, and vice versa. So, I mean, if you're willing to go to the point where you're going to dress as the opposite of your biological gender, and you get a surgery to remove your fucking genitals, pretty sure it's not a flippin' thing like, yeah, you know, how about I chop off my dick and balls? It's a Wednesday. What are we doing on a Wednesday? I don't know. Let's go eat some KFC and then chop off the dick and balls. Why not? Anybody got a hatchet on them? That's not a thing. That's not a thing. If somebody ends up doing that, it's because they fucking are so immensely, overwhelmingly compelled to do it in a way that you cannot understand. So, but again, you know, muddy the waters. And then ISIS. Of course, you got to throw in ISIS when trying to deflect from a serious conversation about something. This is what Trump did when he was asked about it at the debate. You know, Mr. Trump, what's going on here? I mean, you would brag that you basically like sexually assaulting women. Do you understand that?
You know, Anderson, let me just tell you, that's not what I said. That's not what's happening. And I'm going to keep America safe. I'm going to make America great. And ISIS exists.
That's the most obvious of, like, deflection. Let me ask you about this thing, ISIS. But how about this other ISIS? It's like what the Democrats are doing now with the leaks, the email leaks. Putin, Vladimir Putin. Mrs. Clinton, Secretary Clinton, you admitted that your favored Syria policy would kill massive numbers of civilians. Putin, next question.
Okay. So, I still didn't even get to the meat of the answer yet, believe it or not.
He continues, let me give you one policy. Donald Trump's words degraded and insulted women in the most flagrant way possible. Okay, nice. And yet, Hillary Clinton's policy is to allow the murder of 500,000 little tiny women every year. And if she becomes president, that could continue for God knows how long. Yeah. Donald Trump, maybe he kind of admitted he does sexual assault. That's bad. I agree. Being pro-choice is equally bad. I can't deal with these people, man. I can't. I'm getting frustrated doing the show nowadays. The stupidity is so dense. That's not a good point. Like, he thinks he's nailing it when he says that. Oh, yeah? So Donald Trump did some bad things to women. Hillary Clinton murders tiny little women. This is another. So, like, in the first part of his answer, he's kind of refusing to acknowledge that transgenderism is a thing. In this part of the answer, he's refusing to acknowledge the massive nuance of abortion. So, look, everybody knows, I've spoken about this before, I'm a moderate on the issue. Okay, I think that, yes, when you hit the point where it's about 23 weeks, when there's viability there, when you have the nervous system developed in the fetus, and we're talking about something that can feel pain, yes, at that point, there's a line there where after it, it's totally fine for states to regulate it. You know, you can have only exceptions of, okay, life of the mother is in danger, fatal defect in the fetus, rape, incest, stuff like that. But yeah, there's a discussion to be had there. These guys want to pretend like there's no discussion to be had there, and at the second you're done having sex, if you so much as take the morning after pill, you did the equivalent of killing a 43-year-old man or woman. You finished having sex? Well, guess what? There's a third person in the room that has Second Amendment rights. Better get him a gun, because he deserves it, because that's a human being breathing, eating, sleeping just like everybody else. What do you mean? That ain't no damn pile of goo of sex fluids. That's a human being, bitch. But it's not! And then furthermore, so they always make this point as if, like, in the United States of America, there's dismembered people laying in a room, and oh my God, it's so gruesome. Read the fucking statistics, you hack! So, over 90% of the abortions in the United States happen before 20 weeks, which means you're not talking about any pain involved. You're not talking about, a fetus that has reached viability. You're talking about, and by the way, over 80% of them occur before, like, 12 weeks. So you're talking about, you know, gametes and zygotes and pregestation fetuses, and it's fundamentally not the same as, quote, murdering half a million little tiny women every year. There is a war on nuance and intellect on the far right, and we're witnessing it right here. Okay. Okay, I got to continue because I still got a bunch to get to before we call it a week. What? For everybody just joining us now, I got a lot of stuff I got to do for the studio, the new studio, over the next 2 days. Cable, internet, TV, fucking all types of furniture, fun stuff happening left and right. So I'm going to be out of commission for the next 2 days. I'll be back on Monday, but I'm trying to squeeze in as much as possible in this show so you guys still have a bunch of shit uploading to YouTube while I'm gone. Okay. Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee face-planted when he tried to make an analogy about Donald Trump on Fox News here on Megyn Kelly's show. Let's check it out.
The one thing you have to say about Trump, that he is fearless. This is a guy that is comfortable enough in his views, whether you like them or not, that he's going to take it straight to the other person, to their face. He's not two-faced. He's not a phony. Look, I've said this about him, Megan. He's like Captain Quint in the original movie Jaws.
Mm.
He's vulgar. He's salty. He might even get drunk. He's just a terrible. But hold on here.
Okay.
He's the guy who's going to save your butt and save your family. And so at the end of the day, when he kills the shark, you're happy about it. Now, Hillary is the shark. She's going to eat your boat. She's going to have open borders, immigration out the kazoo. And so the choice is, do you vote for Captain Quint, who's going to save your family, or do you vote for the shark? That's the choice you get to make.
Mike, Quint was eaten. How do you not know this about Jaws? You know, yeah, Quint, that's who Donald Trump is like. Sure, he's vulgar, rough around the edges and whatnot, but hey, he ends up killing the shark. No, he doesn't. The shark kills him. It is the worst analogy ever. Why would you do that? It is the... But this is in many ways indicative of Mike Huckabee because he doesn't think things through very much. I mean, he's a fundamentalist Christian, so that's obviously the case. So he uses bad analogies like this. But in a weird way, I'm saying it's the worst analogy ever. It might actually be the best analogy ever because Donald Trump is kind of like Quint.
Yeah, I'm going to take on the establishment. Let me tell you, tremendous. Believe me, I'm like Quint from Jaws. I get the mission accomplished. Oh, shit, I was just eaten and I didn't do anything.
That's how I would imagine the Trump presidency would go.
Oh, yeah, tremendous. I'm going to take this on and fight for the people. Anyway, establishment, what do you want me to do? I'll be your loyal servant.
And he also just ruined, honestly, one of my favorite characters in history. Quint, I think, is one of the best characters ever. Now I'm thinking Donald Trump every time I see Quint. I've watched Jaws, like, roughly fucking 100 times in my life. I think it's a classic movie. It's a great movie. But what's interesting is he said, well, Hillary's the shark. Well, again, that's funny because you said, you go on to say that he kills the shark. No, in your analogy, Hillary would eat Donald Trump. But no, if anything, Hillary is more like, Hoopa! That's my Quint impression. Who, you know, he's the guy who's like dorky and detached and nobody really likes him. But he kind of gets some shit done. It's kind of useful. That's probably the best analogy for Hillary, even though I think Hooper's probably a lot better than Hillary. But yeah, it all falls apart. Like he's trying to keep it together, but the point just like And Megyn Kelly, by the way, I cut out the part there, but she goes on to say, Mike, I hate to be the one to break this to you. Hooper gets eaten. He doesn't kill the shark. So, hilarious. This is the kind of high-minded analogy I would expect from Mike Huckabee and from the far right in general. Okay.
Kenneth Copeland is an old school televangelist, and he really doubled down on trying to get Trump elected. Check this out.
May I just share some, just a word with you? I just got in prayer just a few days ago. The Lord said, I know my way around with politicians. I've been dealing with them since Nimrod.
Oh, my.
And he said, I've never failed yet. Hallelujah. He dealt with Pharaoh. He jerked the slack out of him. Listen, this is God's nation, and nobody is going to take it away from him. Now, I want to get that clear. Right now, in the name of Jesus, no man, no woman, no Democrat, no Republican, no socialist, no communist can take this nation away from God.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I don't know what there is about that you can't understand, but I'm telling you right now, God Almighty is head of this nation, not people.
You sit still. You sit right where you are. Don't you turn that off saying, well, I ain't going to vote anyway. You're going to be held seriously, seriously to account by God if you don't vote. And you're going to find that out before this broadcast is over. You're going to be guilty of murder. You're going to be guilty of an abomination of God.
Oh, that's great. It's always funny watching people who don't know anything about policy trying to convince other people to vote the way they want them to vote. All right, now, let me tell you one more time. You better know that God is on the side of Donald Trump. And understand that if you don't vote for him, you can almost see the wheels turning in his head. You're guilty of murder. Hallelujah! Praise Jesus! Praise God! I love like the old school televangelist act because you can see the bullshit just flowing out of them. That's why they gotta you know kind of play it up with how they talk and what they say, and you know they got the different changes in the cadence and inflection of the voice and rhythm and how they talk, and they're trying to keep you interested because they know there's no fucking substance behind what they're saying. Let me tell you about God. God is, oh, praise the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I always love the yes men in the background, like, like, responding as if the shit the person is saying is obviously true. Like, and you're going to be guilty of murder. Can't argue with that. That's right. What does that mean? If you don't vote for Trump, you're guilty of murder. The irony of this is, of course, how many times have we discussed the clip of Donald Trump? Where he's talking about the families of terrorists. So not the terrorists, the families. He says, we have to take out their families. We have to kill them. So he says, let's murder. And this guy spins it as, if you don't vote for Donald Trump, you're guilty of murder. And then I also love this part. He says, the Lord has been dealing with politicians since Nimrod. He hasn't failed yet. That's what he said. Really? He hasn't failed with politicians? God's picking all the politicians. You sure Mussolini wasn't a little bump in the road, son? Like, whoops, kind of fucked that one up. Stalin? Hitler? Lord, it never messed up with the world leaders. It's not like we've ever had any really, really bad ones. And then I love when he goes full Christian Saudi Arabia on us. God Almighty is the head of this nation. You know, you could just come out there and say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. I have a feeling your audience wouldn't like that as much, but that is what you're doing. That is what you're saying. That, you know, this is, you want us to be the Christian Saudi Arabia. You want us to be a theocracy. And I always love how it's massively narcissistic, too, because it's always U.S.-centric. It always is. The head of this nation, like this is the nation God cares about. Well, that's kind of fucked up. Like, why does he care about Mongolia? What's up with that? Why is he helping people out in Mongolia? Why, Haiti just got fucking wrecked by a hurricane. Over 800 people are dead. What's God doing? You know, he's looking at the presidential election here. That's what he cares about. Then that guy's fucked up, man. Why isn't he helping people over there? What's going on? So anyway, logic isn't a thing. These guys don't care about that. But I love the over-the-top acting because it's like they're trying to fill in for the fact that they know they have nothing substantive to say. So they accuse you of murder if you don't vote for Donald Trump, and they say God is the head of this nation. Okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about recreational weed. I have an interesting story on that front for you. We got our ups, we got our downs. I have good news for you and I have bad news for you when it comes to the issue of marijuana. The Atlantic explains here, recreational marijuana users can now legally light up a joint in states representing about 5% of the U.S. population. By the time Americans wake up on November 9th, that percentage could be swelling to more than 25%. Measures to legalize and regulate the sale of cannabis are on the ballot in California, Arizona, Massachusetts, Maine, and Nevada. And recent polls show the yes vote to be winning in all five states. Not only is that good news, that is overwhelmingly positive news. But the bad news here is from the International Business Times, and they break it down for us. A deep-pocketed coalition is spending big to keep marijuana illegal. Drug companies, the Chamber of Commerce, and the alcohol industry have together poured millions of dollars into the fight. Another industry entered the fray, too, prison food providers. Let's be crystal clear about this. If some or all of these measures somehow get defeated, even though they're winning in the polls right now, it is not going to be because there was a genuine populist feeling against marijuana. It's going to be because these industries lobbied the hell out of everybody and pumped out deceiving ads to trick people into voting against it. Now, I say that because we already know, because it happened once already in the last election. I think it was in Florida, and it was for medical marijuana is where this happened. You had very deceptive ads come out where people thought voting one way on it would mean, legalizing medical marijuana, but voting that way on it meant the opposite. So, and this is what happened. This is the last-ditch effort by the establishment and by the special interests to try to defeat something that they know it's a Hail Mary throw. Hail Mary throw? What am I, fucking a child? They know it's a Hail Mary pass. So this has happened before, and this is the only thing standing in the way of national legal marijuana. Because when you look at the polls, it's crystal clear. From like a year ago, and it's probably even higher now, it was 58% of the American people said, yeah, legalize recreational marijuana all over the country. So when you have that many people on the side, this isn't politically toxic. In fact, that's fairly devastating. That's checkmate, son. That's game, set, match. The only thing stopping it are the industries I just laid out. Why? It's going to cut into their bottom line. They view it as their competition. The pharmaceutical companies are like, fuck, we won't sell as many opiate pills. Okay, let's fight against this. You have the Chamber of Commerce, for whatever reason, they think it's bad for their business. You have alcohol industry, they view it as competition to marijuana. And prison food providers, they want to keep the prisons full so they can keep selling their food, so they want people to still be arrested for marijuana. So you have an unholy alliance of people who aren't fighting this because of principle, because they're actually against marijuana. It's all about the money. It's all about the bottom line. And this is why money in politics and lobbying is the root of all evil in U.S. politics. Because we need to have an actual debate of ideas and philosophies, and when the money is involved, that's not the case. They get to muddy the waters, and they get to basically prop up support for their side, even if it's not actually popular. And this happens on issues, and this happens with politicians. This is why we get politicians that we always hate, because the bad ones are propped up by the money because they sell out the most. So this is the problem. And I can only hope that the polls stay the same and people don't get fooled by the tricky ads when push comes to shove and they do vote to legalize it. I want these states to legalize it, and not just these states to legalize it. I want it to eventually be legalized at a federal level, and I would also free all of the nonviolent drug offenders today.
Okay. I have a new beauty trend to discuss with you guys. This is right up there with the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. The Independent says, a bizarre beauty trend has seen people wiping urine on their faces in a bid for clearer skin. Also known as urotherapy or pee facials, the at-home treatment involves a person collecting their urine, dabbing it on a cloth or a piece of cotton wool, and wiping it across their face. It is then left to dry and rinsed away with water. Those who swear by the treatment say it clears the complexion, tightens pores like a toner, and can treat psoriasis, eczema, and acne. Urine from the morning is said to be the most potent as it has stayed in the body for a long period of time. Wow. Now, they claim that the urea in the pee is what does the trick. But here's my favorite part. It's been tested, and it doesn't work. But nonetheless, people still do it. And the second thing is, quote, urine is primarily water, and there's very little urea in it. It contains less than 5%. And actual skincare products with urea contain 10% or more. So they're putting pee on their face because of the urea content. And then the experts come along, and they're like, guys, there are actual products you can buy at, like, you know, your local store that have more urea in it than your pee. So why are you wiping pee on your face? Oh. And they also say, like, one person tried it and they're like, yeah, I just basically had like a diaper rash on my face. Okay, there's a chance that like people started this to troll people and they tried it anyway because it's just like, I don't know, beauty products, whatever. Yeah, I always want to look better and try to look better, so I'll try anything. I mean, fucking Botox. Aren't you injecting, like, fucking venom into your face or a disease, botulism into your face or something? So people try anything, man. They try anything. So it might have started as some people trolling people, like, yeah, piss on your face. It really works, I swear, here, before and after pictures that I just made up and pulled from somewhere. 90. So that could have happened, and then people ran with it. Or people were really goofy enough to try it up front. Whatever it is, I fear for the future of humanity if this is what we're doing. All right, I'm going to squeeze in one more. We're going to run out of time here, but you guys can stick around. And then I will see you back on Monday, baby. Don't worry. I got a lot of stuff going down with the studio, so I'll be busy. And we're moving closer and closer to the move date, so it's exciting. But anywho, here we go. One more. President Obama wrote an article on CNN, and he made a pretty big announcement. He said, "We have set a clear goal vital to the next chapter of America's story in space, sending humans to Mars by the 2030s and returning them safely to Earth, with the ultimate ambition to one day remain there for an extended time. Getting to Mars will require continued cooperation between government and private innovators, and we're already well on our way. Within the next 2 years, private companies will for the first time send astronauts to the International Space Station." Okay, so if you guys remember, it was a few years back where Newt Gingrich said, we're going to Mars, bitch. And, of course, there was a famous Chappelle Show skit where he's Black Bush, and he says, yeah, that's where we're going, motherfucker. So Gingrich, if I'm not mistaken, Gingrich said something goofy with it, like, oh, we're going to have a Mars colony, and it's going to be, like, in his term in office. And, you know, he was running. So there would, like, already be a fucking Mars colony or something under Gingrich if he were president, according to him. So he was mocked for that across the board. In this case, it appears like it's not really a mockable claim anymore because we kind of are already starting to get the technology to be able to do it. So it's not impossible anymore. It's certainly possible now. And if you were to ask me about this 2 years ago and ask me about just even the concept of it, regardless of whether or not it's becoming possible or not, but just the concept of it, I would have said, honestly, no. I don't think we should go there, and I don't think we should go there because we have so many fucking problems here on Earth that all of our resources should be used to try to fix the problems here on Earth. I mean, this is probably going to cost billions of dollars, so why don't we take that money and try to fucking cure poverty, and why don't we take that money and try to get clean water everywhere? And like, so that's what I would have told you 2 years ago. Today, my opinion actually changed. Now, the reason it changed is because the potential upsides are immeasurable. So, look, I probably would have been saying the same thing if I was around when they did the moon landing. Before, when they decided to go to the moon, I probably would have said, are you guys fucking stupid? We got kids in poverty. We got all these problems. We got disease. Why don't we invest everything to try to fix that stuff? I would have said that, and I would have been wrong. Now, why would I have been wrong? Because the technology that we were able to get because of a lot of the work that NASA put in to try to get us to the moon is technology that eventually improved everybody's fucking life. It's technology that led to the next medical breakthroughs. It's the technology that led to the current internet that we have today and the smartphones and all this stuff. The phone in your pocket today is more powerful than the computer that was used to help get us to the fucking moon. Is that insane? That's fucking crazy. So there are so many upsides to going to Mars that the technological upside, the medical upside, it's immeasurable. So we don't know what we can get out of it. The next breakthroughs in AI, you name it. So that's why my position has flipped, and credit to Lilith Penn, who, of course, does a lot of great stuff for Secular Talk behind the scenes here. Many of the longtime listeners know who she is. But Lilith Penn was the one who swayed me on this. And she's like, no, you're missing the point. Like, your point is valid, Kyle, that we got to invest resources to fucking save people here and get rid of poverty and all that stuff. But you're missing the point that it's not like the end goal is just getting to Mars or getting to the moon to blow ourselves and say we did it. The end goal is the upsides of the technology we created that can make everybody's life better. So that's why I think it makes sense to go. And this is really exciting. And actually, come to think of it, I mean, we can all be in the generation that watches this happen. I mean, imagine how our parents' generation felt when they, you know, or the grandparents, whatever it is, where they looked at, you know, the landing on the moon, and they're like, oh my God, we landed on the fucking moon. This is crazy. This is awesome. I can't believe I'm alive for this. We get to do that for Mars, maybe. That's kind of awesome, I must admit. I love you guys. See you on Monday. Mwah. I'm out. Peace.